appeal to the voters that who support they're trying to earn. And there's a range of party-based models out there, and you know most established democracies use one of those. There are candidate-based systems that don't rely on political parties, and those generally can sound more complex because they are trying to achieve that same goal, but without the easy mechanism of the party being able to kind of group votes in a simple way. And the system of choice voting, the one used out in Berkeley in the KPFA elections, is a candidate-based system, though it certainly promotes the idea of people joining with others and kind of running as a team. Its most interesting use in the United States probably was for New York City Council elections back in the 30s and 40s. They passed it by the voters in 36, used it for five elections from 37 to 45. That was the time when the New York City Council kind of flowered into representing the sort of diversity of opinion in the city, went from having the Democrats pretty much completely controlling the city council to five parties winning seats, Labor Party winning seats, Communist Party winning seats, and the fusion party of LaGuardia winning seats, Republicans winning seats, and the Democrats still winning a majority of seats, but having a very sort of healthy competition from other parties. But the fact that Communists had won seats by the mid to late 40s created a great opening for the Democratic Party old guard to go after it. And over the opposition of almost all progressive forces in the city, they repealed it in a 1947 referendum. In the very next election, they won all but one seat. So it just dampened that kind of representation of diversity that had been there, political diversity, and also racial diversity, because that's when Adam Clayton Powell first won to the city council. Ben Davis won a seat as a black member of the Communist Party. And what voters do is they, rather than vote for one person, or if there are multiple seats, voting for as many people as there are seats, an equally weighted vote, they rank candidates so that you say, well, this is my first choice candidate. This is the person that I really want to have representing me. But in the event that my vote can't help elect that person, then I want my vote to go to my second choice, and here's my second choice. And if my vote can't help elect the second choice, then I want it to go to my third choice. And so that why it promotes sort of a some kind of party-esque formation is that it's helpful for people to run as a team. So people will say, well, vote for our team and make me your first choice, but I want you also to vote for this person second and third, and the people who are running on the other. Also on that team will say, well, vote for me first, but I want you to vote for these people second and third, and our votes will kind of pool together, and we'll end up winning the kind of share of votes that our share of the voters deserve. And what tends to happen with that is that then you put forward a team of candidates that have an appeal to voters that speaks to what they want to have, so that people tend to, say if there's a group of voters or that they're trying to reach out to voters who in include various parts of the electorate, African Americans, gays and lesbians, what have you, whatever sort of constituency they're going after, they will try to run a candidate who reflects that constituency, someone that the members of that constituency are going to want to vote for. But the voters are sort of choosing what it is that defines what they want to be represented by. So that basic goal of proportional representation is that, say, if there's 10 seats, 10% of voters should be able to earn 1 out of 10 seats. The way that they count votes is kind of geared toward that process. The same process of ranking candidates, and please stop me if I'm just kind of going on too long here, can also be done when you're just electing one person. That's the easiest way to think about the system. This is generally called instant runoff voting in the United States. And the recent classic example was the presidential election in 2000, where you had Ralph Nader running, you had Al Gore running, you had Pat Buchanan and the Libertarian Party, you had and George Bush. And when you only can vote for one person, the votes can be spread out in a way that someone can win with less than half the votes. And indeed, that happened in some key states like Florida. And then people start pointing fingers at the candidates that didn't win that many votes, Ralph Nader particularly, and say, well, gosh, he spoiled the election. You know, that the votes were split. Instant runoff voting and choice voting, when used in a proportional election, they pool the votes together so the votes, kind of voters get what they really want.
So what would have happened with the...
Well, so in an instant runoff election in Florida, no one won a majority of the vote in Florida. That's why Nader could be called a spoiler, because if someone wins more than 50%, it doesn't matter what the third party vote was. And if a voter who had voted for a candidate that didn't have a chance to win, after the count was done, you could kind of look at the votes and say, well, you know, it's 40, whatever it was, 49-49 to 1.5 for Nader and 0.5% for everyone else. You say, well, no one has a majority of the votes. The two candidates that have enough votes to potentially win are Bush and Gore. So we will eliminate the rest of those candidates, and their votes will count for whoever those voters for those candidates ranked second. As if it were a second election where everyone came back to the polls, and if I had voted for Gore or for Bush, I would still vote for them, but if I had voted for one of these candidates that didn't make the runoff, I would have to pick between those top two. Well, I've already done that when I've indicated my second choice or my third choice.
So they just retabulate.
Right. So they say Ralph Nader or someone who had voted for Al Gore, you know, if someone wanted him, Al Gore as their second choice, they would list Gore as their second choice. If indeed Nader was a spoiler, in the sense, because the whole concept of that is that the votes he won would otherwise have gone to Gore, well, we would find out, because the voters would have a chance to indicate that. And then, you know, so the vote would go to the second choice, and then we would see who had really had a majority. In the case of Florida, it definitely would have elected Gore over Bush. What it does from a third-party perspective generally in the United States is it frees voters to consider that party, that kind of insurgent candidacy, give them a full chance to run and win, forget the whole spoiler debate, and just say, well, what is the person saying, because I'm free to vote for that person without calculations about whether they're being a spoiler, because I have this opportunity to rank a quote-unquote major candidate, viable candidate, second or third, and then, well, we'll just see what happens. So it really transformed the way that we could consider candidates and third-party candidates. But the mechanism was that ranking the candidates and then the ballot going to a next choice if your first choice can't win. If you apply that to a proportional representation election, it basically means that if I vote for my first choice is a very weak candidate, my ballot will ultimately go to my second choice. And if that candidate is a stronger candidate, maybe my ballot will actually help get them, say, that 10 winner scenario where there's 10 winners and it takes 10% of the vote to win. Say some candidate has 9% of the vote of everyone's first choices, and I voted for someone who got only 1%, but all of us like that other candidate as our second choice, the ballot would end up going to that second choice candidate with 9%, and our votes would put them up to 10%, and they won. And then the one more element to it that I think can sound complicated, but there's some real sense to it, is that if someone has more than 10%, because you're shooting for 10%, you're shooting for each candidate to represent a 10% grouping of voters. But say you have a really popular candidate who wins 20% of the vote, you know, really popular candidate that reaches out to a broad constituency, 20% of people say, I want that person to be my representative. But that's enough voters for two seats. So if you just left it like that, you've actually basically wasted those people's votes, or at least some of their votes, because while they're happy the person won, you know, that's 2 out of 10 mm-hmm. voters only electing 1 out of 10 people. And so that you have to count half the value of each person's vote for their next choice. So half of their value goes to electing their first choice, and then half will go on to their second choice, which preserves the kind of one person, one representative goal, or the idea that 10% of voters should have 1 out of 10% of seats. And from the voters' perspective, they're not doing any of these sort of mathematical calculations or what have you. They are going in and saying, well, I want this candidate as my first choice, but in the event that person cannot be elected with my vote, I want my second choice and third choice. And that's been used in a variety of places. It was used in a number of cities in the U.S. and had one of its ongoing outcomes was better representation of racial minorities. So they had it in Cincinnati City Council elections, and that was a result. African Americans had 2 out of 9 city council seats way back in the 40s when they were only 15% of voters. And that was sort of an ongoing result, which made it a target at that time of people who didn't actually like that outcome.
Hmm.
And also wanted to dominate elections, because when you have proportional representation, a political majority will likely still win a majority of seats, but it can't dominate. It can't just wipe out the opposition because it's not winner-take-all. So if you have 20% of voters who are an independent voice, an independent political force, that's still big enough to be quite meaningful. It's 2 out of 10 seats. It has that history. It's used right now in Cambridge, Massachusetts. One of the results of that has been ongoing representation of racial minorities on its school board and city council. And it's used in countries like Ireland and Australia. Was just adopted in some cities in New Zealand. Most of these countries use party-based systems, but the ones that are interested in candidate-based systems tend to look to this system of voting.
Okay, it is 8:11. You're listening to Wake Up Call, a special edition of Wake Up Call. My name is Janice K. Bryant, and this is WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. And we're talking to Rob Ritchie, who's the executive director for the Center for Voting and Democracy, and he's explaining proportional representation. We're going to go to the phones and take your phone calls in a moment, but just briefly, two words keep coming up over and over again this morning. This stuff is complex and complicated. How do you educate the electorate about this, other than what we're doing now? It's just more and more of these sessions, or what happens in countries or in localities? How do people teach folks how to do this? Because it really is something that's foreign to us.
Well, it's foreign. I mean, there's a lot of experience of places going to some ranked choice system, and it's really getting out that the simple message, which is, rather than vote for one person, or a lot of people are actually familiar for voting for more than one person in a race. Like I live in a county where we have 4 at-large county commissioners, and I can vote for up to 4 people when I'm voting for those seats, and so people do a range of different things. But so that for this one, it's saying, rank candidates, so that you have to have a ballot that makes it clear that that's what you should do as a voter. When Ireland first went to this, and I think it was 1921, a pretty large share of the Irish population at that time still didn't read very well. And
So they've had it for 70 years?
They've had it for, I guess, 80 years. Yeah.
80, yeah.
And very pleased with it. It's had, one of the things it does is it just, once it's settled in, it's very hard to get rid of, because it's provided people, almost everyone, with a chance of really, getting what their first choice, a very high choice kind of representative, keeps people on their toes, because you can have someone who's representing their constituency of voters pretty well, but because of that kind of instant runoff voting kind of dynamic, if I'm a little displeased with them and some challenger kind of emerges, I can say, I'll vote for that challenger, and then I'll list that other person second who's been there because I have been disappointed on the way they've done it. It creates an environment where choices are really going to be available to voters. So the key is saying, rank the vote. It's not just rock the vote or vote the vote or whatever. It's rank it. Don't play games with your vote. Do what, rank your first choice first, second choice second, and so on, and that's the best thing to do. And there's a history of that being introduced to people, and I think there's a good voter education campaign needed to be done. But I think probably any change to a system needs that kind of voter education campaign. I think one thing that's kind of interesting is Ireland, which is, a country that has changed a lot over the years, but still I wouldn't say is a more developed country necessarily than the United States. In their presidential election, using instant runoff voting, they had 99.5% of voters who went to the polls cast a valid vote. In the United States, using our so-called simple winner-take-all system, about 97.5% of voters went and cast a valid vote. So something went on in our system that was actually, affected more voters than it did in Ireland. And one place where instant runoff voting was put in relatively recently, and I thought was quite fascinating, was Ann Arbor, Michigan. Did it in 1975, went for their mayor's race, there was a Human Rights Party. It was a kind of progressive anti-war party in Ann Arbor, and they had pushed this through as a ballot measure in 74. They used it for the first time just 5 months later for the March 1975 mayor's race. The number of invalid ballots in the mayor's race went down from the last election using a plurality vote from 2.5% down to about 0.5%. So actually people, by having some focus on, hey, we're voting differently this year, you rank the candidates, that was enough to remind people, I guess, of what to do, that they actually did it better than they had done before. And what was interesting on the result was the Democratic Party candidate got 40%. It was a black Democratic candidate. The white Republican got 49%. Human rights candidate got 10%, or some, I guess, a little more, 11%. And on the vote of the second choices of the human rights candidate, they put the Democrat over. So those voters had certainly got it, and in a coherent fashion, it made sense for them because they were to the left of the Democrats. They almost all voted for the black Democrat second, and he won. The Republicans went ballistic, and they got a repeal effort, and in a special election, and a few months later, they kind of a low turnout special election, they got rid of it. Mm. But it really had done, voters had done what the system gave them a chance to do.
Okay, Rob, you can stay with us for a while.
I would just like to comment, as has been said by the speaker, there is more than one form of proportional representation. The model that I think it's generally called weighted voting, I might be wrong on that, but that system was in effect for a number of years here in New York City in school board elections, local school board elections. And what happened was that the results were that the teachers union and certain politicians tended to monopolize, came out as the great winners of those elections. And the parents became so turned off by this process that toward the end only about 2% of the parents actually voted. All I'm saying is this is not to condemn this particular method, but to say it is not a panacea and it will not necessarily always lead to the most democratic results.
Just a quick comment on that, because I'm quite familiar with the school board history, and it is a great example of where the kind of electoral counting process is certainly not the only part of a democracy that matters, and the power of the office and people's familiarity with what they do. And it kind of points to the need for a greater variety of media outlets and more local media outlets, because a lot of people just didn't know what a local school board did. I mean, they didn't read it. The New York Times or New York Post or whatever daily news that people read, or it's not going to cover the actions of some local school board unless they're sort of engaged in corruption or scandal. You go to the ballot, there's nothing on the ballot that indicated people's alliances because it just listed the candidate. And you weren't allowed to, I think this was a big mistake when they put the system in, people weren't allowed to declare their team, and they could have said, I'm the better school slate or something, and something that people could say, oh yeah, that's the political force that's trying to do these things, and now I know who's who. But they didn't have that kind of indication. But what's important, I think, as part of the debate, is the Department of Justice reviewed an effort in 98. The New York Assembly tried to get rid of the choice voting system. And the Department of Justice doesn't enter into many of these decisions very often, but they reviewed that decision. And because three boroughs of New York City are covered by the Voting Rights Act, they had the power to stop the change, which they did, because they said the system has been representing racial and ethnic minorities protected by the Voting Rights Act, and your alternative, which actually was another kind of proportional voting, which is less proportional, just to summarize it, but said that that wouldn't do it as well. So that actually of the people who were going to the polls, the system was representing them, it was representing their choices effectively. And for instance, Asian Americans, who finally won a city council seat in the last city council election, but have hardly won anything else in the state, they were doing quite well in the proportional representation elections, the choice voting elections, winning 11 seats in 96 and then 15 seats in the last one. So that It did create openings, which is not to say that the whole system as a whole was working great, the school board system, but that certainly the mechanism of choice voting was representing the diversity of the city better than, say, city council elections.
Okay, so Rob, as I said, you'll be with us for a little while longer, and we will be taking calls now at 212-209-2900. Although the phones have been ringing ever since we came in.
Yeah.
Rob, as long as you can, we hope you can stay with us because I'm sure people have lots and lots of questions about this. Roger, you had a comment?
Yeah, I just want to clarify that we're discussing proposed elections procedures here at WBAI this morning, and that proportional representation is how the KPFA model for elections, which is actually produced two elections at our sister station in Berkeley, KPFA, to local station board elections, the KPFA model uses proportional representation. That's part of why we're discussing it. And that there's a nice, easy overview, because it sounds complicated, but it's a nice, easy overview called Proportional Representation Made Easy at the website that I help edit, WBAI.net, which has a lot of just about any document we're discussing here today. It's also on the website.
I think also the most important thing about proportional representation is the guarantee that every group may end up with a seat in that elected body. So, and I think, and for instance, in Latin America, which is so many people may think are also behind in terms of technically speaking, in terms of modernization and so on, but in so many countries in Latin America, they use the proportional representation, and that's why you heard in so many countries that they have five or six different parties who are part of Congress. It's because the methodology they use is proportional representation. But also, in general, to simplify that, I think that it's very simple. I would say that guarantee that every party, in this case the different parties and political parties, guarantee a seat in Congress and the Senate and so on. So the same thing could be applied to the election in WBI, with the different groups that have different teams running or different slots will guarantee a seat, even if they don't have 40% of if they don't have 40% of the vote and so on. So the fact that that group may have some supporters will guarantee some representation, and we're going to make sure that we have the diversity in our group that is running on the team that we're going to have.
It promotes
running.
Coalition building too, because say you have a candidate has a very small constituency, okay, they're going to pitch to their constituency, vote for me for the station board, but they can also, that person can also reach out to the other constituencies and point out that they are concerned about the issues of the other constituencies. So you could possibly get elected to the board without anybody's first choice votes. You could get everybody else's second and third choice votes from the other constituencies and therefore be seated. It really promotes ending up with a very diverse board, which KPFA has proven. And Ed,
okay,
go ahead.
this is quite, not quite what I had in mind. I wanted the listeners to ask some questions at this point. I wanted you guys to come in and, you know, state your cases, and then I wanted to hear from listeners. I want to hear from listeners who don't come to meetings. I want to hear from listeners who have questions, who will be voting. And we can talk, which we have done for a year, about this with each other. So I don't want us to do that now. So I'm going to go to the phones. I hope you don't mind. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning, everybody. I have a couple of questions, and then I'd also like to tell you how I stand. But first of all, was there not a meeting last night where they voted on the different models in WBAI?
Okay, we had a local advisory board meeting on Tuesday night, and it sort of, yeah, I guess it was a vote, and that local advisory board did vote to support the constituency model. But it wasn't, nothing binding has happened yet for anything. People are taking straw polls, they're getting census of the bodies, but nothing is binding. That's why we're talking now, so that we can, because these folks here, they've been doing a lot of this, but everybody's still learning.
Okay, so now I have two quick questions to Miguel Maldonado.
Go ahead.
But first I'd like to give out an LAB phone number for those subscribers who don't have a computer and that I found to be very helpful regarding, you know, the LAB meetings and details and stuff. And that is area code 212-465-7562. To repeat, 212-465-7562. And that's Patty Heffley's number. Now, Miguel.
Okay, just a minute. Just a minute. That, first of all, I wouldn't, if I were Patty, I wouldn't want my phone number to be on the tri-state area like
that. I think she would.
Maybe she would, but
yeah, cause it's
okay.
All about
just in all fairness, people need to know that, and I guess they can sort of feel this. There are all kinds of factions, and we can say different groups, but we have really different opinions. And if there is a local advisory board phone number, I would like for Miguel to give it. Patty Heffley is not a member of the local advisory board. She's a very staunch supporter of Pacifica and WBAI. She is a fighter for Pacifica and WBAI, but she is not the voice of WBAI nor the local advisory board.
She's one.
So we can't be presenting Patty Heffley as the voice of the local advisory board and as the font of information for the local advisory board. Okay, so go ahead, please.
Okay, Miguel, how many LAB members are there?
How many lab members?
At BAI?
17.
17. Okay. Please give the subscribers who, you know, can't attend the meetings.
Sorry, 15. 15?
Yeah.
15.
16. Okay. Please give the subscribers the names of who is for each model at WBAI and how many lab members are there for each model.
You're a good one if you can remember that, Miguel.
I can remember that, but I think I don't know how important that could be. But
I'm just curious as to the breakdown of who's for what, you know.
Well, you can probably see it on WBAI.
I can tell you the people who came to bow. I mean, I know some people who couldn't make it to the meeting, like Andy Norris, who identified with KPFA. But then you have the other people. Let me tell you the people who identify with constituency matter, which is Marianne Burstein, Anne Emmerman, Cecilia Caruso, Victoria Hunter,
Rashida,
Gail Goldberg, Rashida Arbubaka, and Anthony McCall. And Ray LaForest, and
Ray LaForest is a staunch supporter of the constituency.
Then I support the KPFA, and also Marilyn also support the KPFA.
Okay. All right, we'd like to go to...
Okay, can I get on then to my suggestions?
Well, we have a lot of calls, and you've asked a couple of questions. We really appreciate you having called in. You're on the line. Go ahead.
Oh, hello.
Mm-hmm.
It was stated that the intention is to have 36 people elected to the LAB. Is that correct?
No, that isn't. One firm thing that has come down from the Interim Pacifica National Board is that there's a range that we are suggesting.
Oh, a range?
Yes, a range right now. That because maybe in KPFT they might only want 18, and in New York we want the maximum number.
And
so the range,
what would the maximum number be?
I believe the range is 16 to 24.
Oh, someone said 36.
Wait a minute. Go ahead, Miguel.
A number that is divided by 4, which
right.
is
yes.
from 16 to 24. Basically, that was the...
Okay, one more question, and we're going to go on to the board.
Have the various constituencies been defined and specified, and what are they?
Okay.
And I will hang up. Thank you.
Go ahead, John.
Yes. We have two sets of constituencies. One are called mission constituencies. They include, one, the communities of color. They include the constituencies representing people of African descent, Latinos, Arab Muslims, Asians, immigrants. And then you have Native peoples. In addition, we have the gay and lesbian community, the physically disabled, prisoners, artists, youth, and rank-and-file labor.
And women.
And women. But we also, of course, adopt the position that women should represent 50%, at least 50% of those put on board.
And artists, did you mention?
I mentioned progressive artists. Yes.
All right. Thanks for that. You're on the air. No, I think we better go on. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi. Good morning, Janice. Let me just turn off the radio.
Yes.
Okay. Yes, I'm James from Brooklyn. I'm actually a member of the UC Caucus and the Bylaws Committee, but I did come to the process as a listener. Just quickly, I just wanted to mention that the idea of constituency bodies and assemblies are not antithetical to proportional representation, that in fact countries such as Germany, Switzerland, Spain, and South Africa, which use proportional systems, have used constituency bodies to revitalize their democracies after crisis. Germany after World War II, Switzerland after a civil war, Spain after Franco and dictatorship, and South Africa after minority rule. And I think our situation in Pacifica somewhat qualifies as trying to overcome a crisis situation when you consider a hijacking and a total and a diversion from our mission. And the constituency idea is it's also being considered in Canada by diverse groups. And I believe it's an important means of vital democracy to not just have diverse faces, but to have diverse interests represented in a broad body that can move an organization ahead.
Okay, thanks, James.
Okay.
Just a moment. I just realized that I lost Rob Ritchie, and I just wanted to mention something he told me last night, talking about constituencies. He mentioned New Zealand today, and he said that the Maori, an indigenous group of people there, that they also vote in a constituency there. So it is happening. Okay, go ahead.
I had only completed actually half of my answers to which of the constituencies. I listed the mission constituencies, but there are also other constituencies, geographical constituencies, and we break that down by New York, Connecticut, Jersey, and the suburbs, and we also have the staff, of course, paid and unpaid.
Okay, and just for the record, if I'm not mistaken, the hybrid model does not use the geographic constituency, correct?
Right.
Okay, back on the phones. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hello, this is Patty Heffley, and I want to make a disclaimer. That is not my phone number. Thank goodness. That is a hotline number from the Coalition for Democratic Pacifica, New York, and it's been a hotline number for a number of years.
Okay.
So, and I never claim to be any local advisory board member or anything.
I
make announcements of meetings so people that don't have the internet, if they have that number, can actually get find out where a meeting is if it's not been broadcast on the airwaves.
Okie dokie.
So I wanted to, if people could clarify, I have like a couple of things I want to say. They're all very short, but if there's going to be the streaming of this this national board meeting this weekend, or if it's going to be broadcast.
I think some parts of it, it seems like, I was talking to David Rosenberg, and he thinks he's going to be preempted, so I think there'll be some parts of it. I don't think he's going to air the entire, I don't think they're going to air the entire meeting, though,
okay,
the whole
well,
weekend.
There's a website, kpftx.org, and they'll probably be streaming the whole thing for anybody that's a bylaws junkie.
kpftx.org.
Right.
Okie dokie.
Okay, now, I just wanted to say that one thing that keeps being said is the representation. And to me and many people, the way to empower all these various communities that all these models are committed to is to make sure that their issues are in some relevant fashion on the airwaves. I mean, this is really, trying to compensate for every single group of people through governance is kind of a problem because you're never going to have that. But the airwaves is really what, this is a radio station, and and it needs to run. So really, the governance should be handled by people that really love and understand the nuts and bolts of the network. And there may be the you know, a program council should include all these people that need to be represented somehow. So I that's just my personal take and many others. And the other thing is that through this bylaws process, the station WPFW in Washington, D.C., they chose yet their own bylaws.
Oh, and, right. We forgot about Jabari and the mission-based program.
Well, I have a little overview of that. It's really 1 minute long. But
well,
it's very short. It's just what it is. It's, their mission is kind of exactly in contrast. It's the other side of the idea, which is the mission-based bylaws, is it places the emphasis of membership on the work a person does to fulfill the Pacifica mission.
And it also doesn't seem to have elections.
It doesn't.
It doesn't say how a person gets to be in a position, but I don't think it's through elections. Thank you so much for calling, Patty. But I'll send out the call again. We've been talking to each other for a while, and we should want to hear what other people have to say. Okay? Okay. No, I hear what you're saying, Joe, but we raise points, and we wouldn't do anything but go in circles. Go ahead, Christian.
Yeah, I just want to bring out that one of the main issues I think we should be focusing upon here, and I think there's a consensus, in general consensus, that oppressed constituencies need to be represented. And really what this is boiling down to is like how the representation is really effected. And
Because we're all saying we want the same thing.
I heard Miguel say the other, you know, just a few minutes ago that, you know, he doesn't mind being represented by someone who has a clear statement of issues that he agrees with. Now, that's fine. But if we look at the complexity of the New York mosaic in terms of oppressed constituencies, it is very clear that unless you are part of a of certain constituencies, you are just not familiar with certain issues. I mean, if you're going to be dealing with issues of gay, lesbian, and transgenders, or issues of disabled, or issues particular, even you know, broad categories such as women, you know, unless you are intimately involved in certain of these struggles, you are just not familiar with some of these issues. And it just kind of makes sense that if we're going to look at fair representation of these constituencies, we ought to have a mechanism where people who are involved in these struggles are intimately involved in selecting their representation.
Okay, thanks, Christian. Go ahead. You're on the air. Hello?
I'm on the air?
Yes, you are.
Oh,
you
my
called.
God. Thank you. I'm Harriet.
Hey, Harriet.
You
turn
know
off
me,
your
darling.
Radio. You
yeah,
know better.
I did. Well, I didn't expect to be on the air. Okay. I kind of woke up like maybe some people. Turned on the radio, didn't know you all were on, I guess, and heard only part of the KPFA model, so I don't even know exactly the questions, but I'd like to speak about the constituency model, and I had run into Joe one day, and he gave me some information about it. I stopped going to bylaws meetings, like, I think, you know, a hell of a lot of people, because I didn't have the patience for some of what happened, and I very much thank the people who did have the patience, okay, and all of you for all the work you've done. I think there are major problems with the constituency model because a hell of a lot of people don't fit into any category. They're mestizo in some countries or mulatto in other countries. They're people who come from a family that has 50 colors in their children because they're from, you know, whether they're from Latin America, whether they're from the Philippines, like my nephew's children are already running into racism with these Chinese eyes, you know, because they're part Philippine-American. They don't fit into it. And my niece is in the bisexual movement. You know, she doesn't fit. I've been waiting to hear that word, bisexual. It's actually a movement. I know nothing about too much, but my niece is in it. There is no way you can cover all the categories of who we are, because we're really defined as white and black in this country, to the great dismay of anyone who comes from either the Caribbean or from, you know, Latin America or from anywhere in the world. It's just awful, awful. But the census try to do it. You know, the census amazingly try to do it, and I would say basically flunked in so many ways. And it's a political definition. You know, it's really a political definition. So when the census try to say, are you white, black, or biracial, how many people passed? I'm Jewish. My when I was 12 years old, kids changed their nose. So they actually had an operation, changed their nose so they wouldn't look Jewish. Or my, you know, parents' generation, people changed their name, like my sister-in-law's father, a German-Jewish immigrant, so the kids would have better chances of getting ahead and getting into Yale, where they used to not be able to get into. You know, I don't want to give, I mean, I'm sorry to do a history lesson, but I think it's impossible. And I walked away from listening to Joe, who I have great respect for on so many levels and all his work in the struggle, thinking, you're in Never Never Land. And also, I was a staff person. I mean, that's how I identify, if you really want to know, although I'm just beginning to come back and do stuff at the station because I'm broke, and I always was, and I certainly was at the station. You know, I was crazy. I was 55, and I worked for nothing for 3.5 years, you know, so, and then a lot of people do. Yeah, and they do it as community people, and the eighth community person I can think of who's been very sadly not there at the moment for whatever reason is Shine, who came out of jail, you know, wrote Bernard in jail, black, and he, you know, probably defines also as prisoner because he was that some of his life, and turns his whole life around by being at the station. And I can think of, I mean, I can give you lots of stories of people who went through major changes by coming to the station as listeners and had great opportunities. And so many listeners that I listened to in the past whole year, and of course Patty Heffley, who I've listened to for 5 years, but I shouldn't get personal, only say, you know, the listeners are it. They are it. Well, so is the staff, you know, and the staff are listeners.
Yeah,
so there I am, and you can take it and do what you want with it. Donna seemed to make a nice, I want simplicity. Simplicity. I don't understand half of what I just, a few things I just heard. I understood Lanny Grenier. Hope I'm saying your name right. That's the first time I understood proportional representation when I was in a hall and listened to her at NYU. She's brilliant. But, you know, again, I'm having trouble understanding it, I got to admit. And I keep running into people who no longer listen to BAI or who definitely are no longer involved. And I say, hey, BAI was taken back a year ago, you know?
A lot of people don't know.
A lot of people. And a lot of people of color, if we want to get down to it, stop coming to meetings, period, to take back the station because of anarchists, because of crazies, because of some people that I think, and I have said this right to their face, are agents in their midst. And I've been around, I'm 62. Other groups, including media, that have been destroyed by agents, that I'm so glad Pacifica has not yet and hope never will.
Thank you,
Harriet. Bye.
I was thinking of, well, I've said it all along that I'm for the simple, you know, keep it simple, stupid thing. And I just, you know, America ain't ready for reform yet, like they used to say about Chicago. And I think it's going to be, I think this is like the, my opinion, it's like the metric system. Everybody else in the world will be able to do it, but I don't know if we're going to be able to make it happen. But we're going to have to do it here at Pacifica, but I just can't. I just don't know. And I shouldn't be, they're going to be mad at me for saying this now, and I've done so well all day. I'm going to go back to the phones and shut up. Okay. You're on WBAI. You're on Wake Up Call. Go ahead. We're talking about
good
elections.
Morning. I've listened carefully to the lab members who are pro four constituency models, and today I heard their supporters of constituency. I think there are some dangers in constituency models, and I express myself in a couple of minutes. I think out of those 200,000 that our friend named, if you, the complication of the constituency model election is that instead of 20,000, only a couple of thousand will take part because it's much more trouble to take part personally in an election rather than voting by mail. This is one.
Do you attend the meetings?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yes.
I really thank you for your input, but as I said before, I really want to talk to some folks who haven't been getting... this is the voice of the voiceless time, like which we always say. Go ahead. You're on the air. Hi. You're on the air?
Yes.
Go ahead. You're on the air. Hello. This is WBAI. You're on the air.
Hello. I am very much for proportional representation. I will fight for it until my dying breath. Now, I like Joe K. Unity Coalition model. And as a humanitarian, this is the model that I would prefer. But I would not be too unhappy with the KPFK model.
KPFA.
Yeah,
Josh,
I like,
we're not going
to fight
to the death.
I listen to it on the Internet, and I like it. I mean, I like its politics, and it's a wonderful station, KPFK, and it's really my politics. So I wouldn't be too upset, but I think human nature, knowing something about tenant organizing, many a times tenants have told us at Met Council they can't come up with the $15, but when push came to shove, they were at the doorstep of some hack lawyer for $150 an hour. So you know, as Esther Rand, our old leader, used to say, she used to say, and if you remember, she was a committed communist. She used to say, after all, Joshua, we live in capitalism. We talk socialism, but this is a capitalist country. So that's it.
Okay, thanks,
bye-bye.
Josh. And I don't think we're going to make you fight to the death for any
okay.
of these electromagnetic.
Thank you, Janice. But I won't be upset by anything.
Okay, thanks.
Bye.
Yes, Christian.
Yeah, I'd just like to respond to a concern that was expressed by a caller that some people are just not going to find, not to be able to find a clear constituency that they identify with.
Yes, that was
I, that's really important, because I think one of the strengths of the proposed model here is that, you know, there not only are there mission constituencies that you can freely choose to ascribe to or subscribe to, but there are also broad geographic constituencies that you can, if you know, you don't identify with a particular mission constituency, then you can make your choices in the geographic constituencies. And that's one of the differences between the hybrid model and the Unity Caucus proposal.
Yes, right.
Exactly, yeah.
Go ahead, Roger.
That was Christian who's speaking in favor of the constituency model for elections, and this is Roger Manning. I'm speaking in favor of the KPFA model of elections. And Christian and I actually completely agree. We do basically all agree that we need diversity on the boards, and to ensure it is really essential. And Christian, you keep saying that it's the mechanism that we got to figure out. It's the mechanism that's going to present this. And the thing is that the KPFA model is working, and it has done it in Berkeley. We've run down how diverse that board is earlier. I could run it down again, or you can go to WBAI.net and look it up.
Okay, thanks. We're going to go back to the phone. Okay, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Leslie, I thought that was you.
Yes, it is. Good morning. I know that I often have access to the air when other people don't, but if I could just for one moment, this is Leslie Kagan. I just want to add one other element to this discussion, and that is that whatever the final election model is, really the most critical work that we have to do in order to get to a point of real inclusiveness and real diversity and true representation is the outreach work. And, you know, there are pros and cons for any of these election models. What we really need to do is focus in on how we're going to move this whole bylaws process forward. And that means that there's going to have to be compromise, that we are looking for a system that can work, that people can feel good about and comfortable enough inside of that they can recommit themselves to helping to rebuild this network. And we are far from out of the woods in that rebuilding process. So I really appreciate the discussion that's been going on this morning. I think it's been very clear and very informative. And at a certain point, we need to get off the dime and start making decisions and move forward into the next phase of rebuilding Pacifica.
Okay, thank you. I'm really glad you called, Leslie, because you brought up something. The word, I think, did come up once or twice today, but it's something that we all agree on and we all need to be emphasizing more, and that's the outreach effort
yes.
has to be made. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Okay. Go ahead. You're on the air. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes. Hello?
You're on the air.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Janice. I heard that there will be, you mentioned, among the different constituencies, you mentioned a women constituency and an immigrant. Does that mean that there won't be any women or any immigrant in the other constituencies?
Okay. Answer that. Okay.
No, it just means that we will guarantee that there will be at least a representative. And that doesn't necessarily mean only one, but that we guarantee at least that representation.
But also I think just in that sense, I think that there's a possibility that could be more than three immigrants in one group, because when you guarantee that we definitely going to have immigrants running, okay, and I'm going to make sure of that, because I'm an immigrant, and that's one of my number issues in Pacifica. We had a big problem when it comes to programming to immigrants. But the thing that I'm trying to make is that there's a possibility that going to be not only that we're going to make sure as a person who identifies being involved in the struggle of Pacifica, and I want to fight for an immigrant to be there. Not one, because I think when it comes to the proportion and to different way that you look into how this country has been changing, it's because of immigrants. So we guarantee that in the KPFA model, we're going to be more than one immigrant. If you look at the KPFA election and just take a look what the sample is right there. So to me, it's not a matter to one with one person, but going to happen to other constituencies that may end up with nothing. So and based on what's going to happen, and Leslie, we're talking about compromises, and I think that basically the constituency model on a national level doesn't have that much foundation anymore to survive as it is if they don't make a quick move and a strategic decision to compromise with other groups till they have the time.
Can I just respond? And also, Roger made a misleading statement earlier about four of the local advisory boards rejecting the constituency model. The fact remains that Washington has its own model, that Texas has a model that in important respects veers from the KPFA model. And so since we need three boards to ensure the victory of any particular model, it means that everything is still up for grabs.
Right, I think that's right. Okay, that had been sort of my understanding, too.
It's not that what you said was incorrect. It was the implication that it's, I know you do, Roger, but the fact is that different areas are taking different positions, so everything is still up in the air, even though the constituency model has been rejected by 4 out of 5 listening areas.
Thank you. Go ahead. You're on the air. Hello? You don't feel like jumping into
Hello.
The fray? Okay.
Hello?
You're on the air.
Yes. Listen, I didn't hear Native Americans, indigenous people mentioned.
I can't believe I didn't catch your voice. I'm really getting rusty. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Good morning to all. I thank you first and foremost for your leadership in all of this. Not everyone, including myself, can be at these meetings. Prefatory comment.
I haven't been at them either.
if like the report to the listener, which is inadequate in that, I don't know if it. Hello.
I'm here. Yeah, we're all here.
I would like if you could repeat this at like the 3 o'clock hour and the 9 o'clock hour, and even for those people getting home late from work at 2 o'clock. I think that's first thing. Second thing. I have been unemployed, and I worked during the campaign at least 6 days or 7 days. So in terms of membership, I don't go with the constituent model because that's how we got some of these other constituents represented during the coup.
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
In terms of, like, being a member,
mm-hmm.
if you go with the present system, we're not in a vacuum. If you go with minimum wage, I think, 10 hours within each period of fundraising should be given. I don't
think so you're saying that you want to see even more of a commitment.
But yes, and a living wage, I think, is $10 an hour. And so 5 hours, three times a year, I don't think is too much to ask. Secondly, we're a dysfunctional democracy at best in this entity called the United States at this time. Serbia just canceled an election a month ago because not enough people got out to vote. Giuliani got in with 22%, and Messenger got 15%, and 1% for Albanese, and 62% of the electorate that was registered, not even eligible, didn't come out to vote. I think what we could do is, while we need affirmative action, which is a kind of a detour sign, you know, excuse our mess until we give you the best, I was out at KPFA on vacation, or I visited their meeting actually doing this. And while there's a lot of things I have reservations about, I would go with that at present. But I would try to model our system like Australia, Canada, or otherwise a democracy that requires people to vote on this basis. With every right, there comes obligations and duties. We don't like it, but we all recognize the obligation or the duty to pay taxes. We don't like it, and it's discriminatory, and especially as a Pacifica person, I don't like to see 18-year-old males having to sign up for a conscription for a draft, but we have it. I think everyone who is a so-called member has to vote. If they don't vote, it's part of losing their membership. Because we right now in this country don't have a country. We have an entity. And 62% in like the last mayoralty or the previous mayoralty is a silent anarchy. The overly opulent feel they own the system. The overly oppressed feel like they're abused by the system. And then the overly indifferent feel like they're going to get their golden egg even though the goose is being cooked.
Well, I know that all of us agree with that last statement, and I didn't realize the time really has gotten away from us. And I wondered if you'd like to make some concluding statements. You only got about 30 seconds. So we'll just start. Only 30 seconds, each of you. What you want to leave folks with, what you want them to think about. Start with you, Roger. We'll go around the room.
Okay, as I've been trying to say, the KPFA model, it's worked twice for KPFA, our sister station in Berkeley. And it actually, if one really studies these proposals and really is honest, you'll see that it does actually address all the concerns, or most of the concerns, very well of the people that that are coming from all different directions in this sort of process of trying to develop an elections process. And go to WBAI.net. And you'll see all these documents there, including explanations and proportional representation and this sort of thing. And Pacifica.org as well has some information.
Well, an editorial comment. Just disagreement doesn't mean that you're dishonest when if you look at something and you don't think that it's what you would like to have, that doesn't mean that you have a dishonest viewpoint.
Well, I guess what I mean, it's kind of hard for us to be honest with ourselves sometimes, and including myself, everyone.
I just want to say to encourage the different parties that there's maybe still time for compromises. I'm trying to teach the people not to live in a fantasy world. Look at the reality. Look at the dynamic that's going on. I support the KPFA model, but, you know, it's still open for compromise, and I think this is something that may happen.
Thank you, Miguel. Oh, boy, we're being thrown out, folks. Thank you very much. I'm sorry we can't have any more comments, and we really appreciate this. I'm sure we'll be able to do it again before, before the elections. I'm really sorry. This is Janice K. Bryant. For WBAI's Interim Pacifica National Board. Thank you.
Thank you, Janice.
Yes, thank you. It's very clear. I think it's really good.
Please.
And you're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. Time is 8:59 and 10 seconds. Coming up next, Democracy Now. Just a closing word here. That the Pacifica Interim Board will be meeting this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in Washington, D.C. at All Souls Unitarian Church, 6900 Harvard Street in Washington. And for those of you who want to go down and can't afford to fly, You can get there on what we call the Chinatown Express, which is a bus that leaves from Chinatown on Friday evening at 5 and 6 p.m. And during the break in Democracy Now, I'll bring you more information. I think one of those numbers that you can call for the for that bus is 917-763-2320. Come